Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And yes, we're back in the room, and today we are going through the keyhole, so let's see if you can guess who this is. He's bearded, he's a child of the 80s, his real name is Dave, and he's the pride of Stamford La Hope. It is... Scroobius Pip, yes!
Hello!
Did anyone guess that? Do you reckon anyone out there guessed that?
I don't know, but weirdly, last night I was looking on my Wikipedia page, which I haven't done in ages, but I needed to know embarrassingly when one of my albums was released, and I didn't know. But on there, it calls me David, and then in brackets, Dave Meads.
I saw
so the fact that I've added the Dave, it's like, I mean...
I saw that half an hour ago, when I was doing my research for this piece.
Exactly. I don't know how that got on there, but it was a lovely addition. I'm sure people know that sometimes David is abbreviated to Dave.
It is terrifying though, isn't it, going on your Wikipedia, because there's all sorts of weird stuff on mine that isn't
Years and years ago I had someone write my Wikipedia page just because I was like, I want some actual facts and information in there, and then I've not touched it since, so all of it will have changed, but there will be this core there that has remained, and there'll be loads of extra bits added that are probably nonsense and ludicrous.
We'll find out the facts, the wheat from the chaff. Right, I'm so crap at podcasts, I've started recording on the wrong microphone, so at this point I'm not going to edit the interview, we're going to carry straight on, but I am going to just quickly switch mics. Right, we're back in the back on the podcast, back in the room. How embarrassing. I mean, you know, I just said to Pip off air, this is really quite terrifying because, I mean, I've done pretty much everything in my career, but, you know, one thing that I've only just really started properly is podcasts, and it's kind of terrifying interviewing or doing a podcast with one of the godfathers of podcasts, Scroobius Pip. So, I mean, Pip, how long have you been doing this podcast lark?
So I've been doing mine for, I think we're coming on to the 6-year anniversary. So, Yeah, it's been a while. And it's kind of cool because it's been great to watch the development, because that time 6 years ago, podcasts weren't particularly taken seriously or respected or anything, and then it's got to a point now where they're a legitimate thing, so it's kind of, yeah, it's nice.
I mean, they're beyond a legitimate thing, aren't they? They've sort of it's kind of like when MP3 came over and took over from CD, or CD took over from vinyl. It's like podcasts are here and everyone is doing one.
It's been beautiful doing the Pod Bible stuff, which I'm not going to talk about loads. It's a magazine.
I was going to plug that. No, don't start.
But no, it's been beautiful doing that, because we've worked with Global as one of our partners on it, and obviously it was XFM that I had a radio show and I left to start doing a podcast. And at that point I'd kind of said I could do an XFM podcast, and they were like, no, we're not really in that world. So it's great that all these years later I'm going back to say, so now you're into podcasting. And let's work together. And they're proper into it. They're proper into it and backing it and investing in it. And it was cool because the people who are leading the run are the guys who I worked wherever on my XFM shows. So they're the guys who've seen me go off and actually see that podcasting is a real thing, and they've kind of hammered the doors down until they're allowed to have a podcast area.
You know those interviews where someone answers all your questions in the first in the first 2 minutes? You've just done that.
Sorry about that.
And I was going to talk to you about going from a radio show to a podcast. I was going to talk to you about your pod Bible. Amazing.
We can talk about all of it.
We will talk about it. We've got 27 minutes left. So, I mean, let's start with Distraction Pieces, your podcast.
Yes.
And, I mean, because I was lucky enough to be one of the guests on that, wasn't I? Was that kind of in the early days?
How long ago was it? It was in the first year or a year and a half, I would have said, yeah.
And so podcasts, I mean, I know we are going to talk about festivals, by the way, for people that love festivals and have just tuned in, but Pip is far too interesting a man to just talk to about festivals. So, and, you know, like I say, he's encyclopedic on podcasts, and I'm still learning every day on that. So at that time, you know, who did the first podcast? Do you know that?
So in my mind, it's people like Ricky Gervais and Russell Brand had his XFM one and things like that. But there's arguments. I know there was Americans doing it for longer. It was given the name podcast by a journalist working at The Guardian at the time, I think. So it's kind of,
it's an English invention.
I think so, yeah. It's got a weird history and lineage, but definitely when I started 6 or so years ago, there weren't that many people doing it in the UK. I'd say Richard Herring was still doing his, had been doing his at that point, but people like Gervais and that had stopped. Adam and Joe had stopped. The biggest podcasters seem to be Americans, and they're like Mark Maron and all that kind of thing, and they're the ones I kind of took, I was listening to and decided to rip off, and then I got all the credit over here with all these magazines and papers saying, so how did you come up with this? Just listen to what other people are doing and blagged it.
I mean, so at that time, you know, obviously we've got a bit of history with the record label and your, you know, Dan Lissack versus Scroobius Pip, your live career and everything. But I think it's fair to say that you kind of turned your back on a lot of that stuff, not in a negative way, but to do podcasts.
Completely
as a choice.
Which
is quite a brave thing.
It's a weird one to bring it onto festivals. It's only sitting here now that I realise my first experience of broadcasting was on Best of All Radio, when me and Dan were playing and we were asked to do an hour or two of this show, and it was after that I then went to XFM and then to podcasting. But I mean, I'm a big believer in, I guess I'm a bit of a control freak, so when me and Dan had done our third record, because when you guys signed us, it was a 3-record deal, and at that point everyone we knew was getting signed, and most of them weren't completing their deals.
1 hour.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's such a hard industry. It's why we put our faith in you guys. Because it's a story I've told before, but we were talking to all these big labels, and we were coming to you specifically and asking for advice and saying, is this a good deal? Is this good? And then me and Dan kind of sat down and said, well, Rob's got a label, so if he's the person that we trust, then let's go and see if it's an option there. And that's kind of how that all came together. So the fact that we got to complete our 3 records, it meant the world to me. And it felt like, with me and Dan at that stage, I felt, well, we've done 3 records, which is also a lot, so I felt I've said all I need to say at this stage. So to choose to stop felt far better than to have to stop, if you know what I mean. And again, I reference you a lot to this day, because I still have people ask me to do gigs. I've been offered Glastonbury slots and all sorts of other things, and I always say, currently my last ever gig was on stage at Best of All. Rob the Bank introduced us, and he's the guy who signed us and put our records out, and the crowd all knew it was our last gig, and they all sung along, and people from Sunday Best were there, and my family were there, and friends were there. I'm not taking that off my last gig. I'm not taking that off my last gig thing for a uni tour, or do you know what I mean? A random one of gigs somewhere. Well, maybe I'd be tempted, but it's exactly that. It's like I get to say that's where it ended at the moment, and it was around 8,000 or so people all singing along, all knowing
at least,
and all getting into it. So it's like that's a beautiful thing to get to choose that that's how we end it.
Yeah. I mean, I see people all the time on your socials barracking you, kind of like, come on. Because the thing is with you guys, yes, you were amazing on record, but you were just as amazing, if not better, live. And your whole, the theatricality of the way that you performed together and, you know, the big book and every the props and everything, it was just kind of totally infectious. So I can see why people are hammering onto you, but park it, people, because he's got a podcast out, he's got Pod Bible, he's got flipping, he's French Bill in Taboo, for God's sake. I mean, we're going to get onto that anyway.
Yes.
But let's delve into, because we are talking festivals, it's the eighth set of festivals, and
yes,
we, you know, we love to have a sort of broad church here where we talk about anything and everything, and we want to get back into podcasts. But I said to you literally this morning, that's how lastminute.com we are, we were like, maybe have a little theme here, Pip, maybe think about something on the tube on the way here.
Yes.
So what have you come with?
My top five bands I've watched at festivals, or festival moments.
Nice.
So just of live acts. I've got a top five.
So it could be a favourite toilet trip that you had at Glastonbury.
It could be. I've gone for acts and performers.
Oh, okay.
But I've got my top five, and I've got some honourable mentions if we've got time at the end.
Let's
so
go.
I was pleased with that.
Well, let's sort of have one of those, and then we'll delve into some of your other stuff.
Yeah.
And then another one.
That's perfect.
Like that?
Yeah, I love that.
Should we have done this bit before we started the podcast?
No, I like that we're figuring it out as we go. That's podcasting, ladies and gentlemen. So my number five is a performance that I only saw two songs of. And it's a performance that I loved, but that I got told off for watching. And the reason is it's Rage Against the Machine headlining Reading. And it was a really exciting weekend because that same night, me and Dan were headlining the Festival Republic stage at Reading Festival. And that was a big deal for us because we'd played a load of festivals. We'd had some great slots. We may have headlined a stage or two, but Reading was the festival that I'd gone to since I was a kid. And the Festival Republic stage it's a smaller stage, but it's a decent size. It was on the posters. And we were at the top of that. And that meant the world. But equally, from our festival experience, like, we loved playing festivals because we felt we had a show that could win people over. It's why we loved at Best of All doing early slots on the main stage, because you'd start with people not paying attention and by the end we'd get a decent amount in. But because of that, we're also, as you'll know, we're very polite young men. So we're used to, you play your gig and then you go. And I didn't think about the fact that if you're headlining, that you can have an encore. So we did our set, and our set always ended with Dan going nuts. So we did our set, I came off stage, and then I ran to catch the end of Rage Against the Machine on the main stage. Dan finished up, came up, and the whole crowd was chanting for more. He was told that we could do more, and he was like, where's Pip?
I
went and watched the last two Rage songs, because I didn't know that was an option. It was my stupid, polite ignorance. I was like, well, we've done our allotted time, and we've done what's overrun. People have got beds to get to.
When did you find out that you could have been...
When I went back, and Dan was furious at me, because obviously that's the first... And Dan lives in Reading, so it means even more to him to headline Reading Festival, or headline a stage at Reading Festival. So yeah, I came back, and he was like, dude, where have you been? I was like, I went to catch the end of Rage. He was like, they wanted an encore. I was like, oh.
Possibly our best, biggest ever festival spot, and you ruined it.
I ran off. But, you know, leave on wanting more and all that. It was exciting.
Oh,
but,
man.
Yeah, it was amazing to see Rage at that point, because it was towards the end, or they'd finished, and then they were only coming back for a few shows. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've still never seen them, so I'm envious as we're sat here now.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's number five in your all-time top five.
Yes.
Let's go back. So, distraction pieces. Who have you recently had, or who have you got coming up that you're really sort of excited about? And what format is distraction pieces for people that are stupid enough not to have caught it?
It's just long, rambling, unorganised interviews. So I'm sure they'll be familiar with the format. But yeah, it's with musicians, comedians, actors, just anyone of interest. I've had scientists on and all sorts of things. So one that springs to mind, like, I've had a few this year. I had Louis Theroux recently, and that's been huge.
Wow.
And it was amazing to get to talk to Louis. It's one I've been lining up for 2 years, and it finally came together. I had Joe Gilgan recently, and it was an amazing one, because he's in This Is England and Preacher and loads of amazing things. But his most recent show, Brassic, has him in it, because he's written it, and he's playing someone with bipolar, and he has bipolar, and he struggles hugely with it. But it's also got a character in who's got a stutter. Wow. And it was the first time I'd seen a show where, at least the first time he stutters in a scene, it's not referenced or addressed. It's not, oh, it's this big deal. It's just a guy who's got a stutter. And it comes up later, his mates ribbing for it because they're all that kind of mates.
Yeah.
But it really meant the world. So that was a really great chat because within 5 minutes, we were talking deeply about the struggles I've had having a stutter in music, but now in acting, the struggles he's had as someone with really severe bipolar and the fear of getting a role and then maybe not being able to fly, or maybe not being able, you know, his point was he's always delivered, he'll always make it work, but it might not be as easy as you'd assume, that it's just this dream of he's got this amazing gig.
Yeah.
It might be he then has to take 2 months off to recover because it's really drained got him. On top of him, yeah, and drained, yeah, yeah, him. So wow, that was a fascinating one. But the one I'm going to actually choose, even though I'm listing all of these, earlier in the year, and I think it got overlooked a little bit because I had loads of podcasts. Obviously, I have one every week, but I got to have Mary J. Blige on.
Oh, man.
And that just meant the world to me. That was hugely exciting because it's Mary J. Blige to get to have an hour with her. And it was part of a press junket. And one of the reasons I love it is the first 20 minutes or so, it's a typical press junket. I couldn't get past her wall. It's very much, here's my set answers. And then about 20, 25 minutes in, we got onto the subject of hip-hop. And I earned her respect. Yeah. Like, we had this connection. I could talk about the early days of Biggie and the difference, yeah, at the end and all things like that, as she was someone who brought him through. And we could talk openly about, you know, she was one of the first people to collaborate with R. Kelly and bring him onto a large scale and all the horrendous stuff that's going on now there. Yeah. So we talked briefly on that, but I don't think I would have broached that subject if we hadn't got to that connection. The fact that we'd got to that connection point made me go, all right, let's see how this goes.
Did you get a handshake, a fist bump?
Yeah, we got a hug at the end, and it was a hug. Whoa. So, yeah, it was amazing. And it's one that, I don't know, it's weird. The week after, I had Joe Cornish on, who's amazing as well, but it felt like that completely overshadowed Mary J. Blige. It's like, it's Mary J. I love Joe Cornish. He's a legend too.
Should have taken a month off and and then started again.
Really, seriously, guys. Or release that episode every week.
Yeah, you don't want to come up after Mary J.
And this week, I'm releasing Mary J. Blige again, because come on, let's have a look at Mary. Yeah, but that was cool to get to chat to her. Because it's weird, I've not had a wealth of musicians on. I get pitched. I think the music industry has been slow to catch up. Like, I recently had Kano on, and that was amazing. But for years, all the musicians I've had on, or people in the music industry, people that I've just hit up, as we did, like when I had you on.
Yeah, yeah.
All the actors and comedians.
You were really scraping the barrel at the beginning, before you got onto the real stars.
I got the big but all the actors and comedians, I get pitched all the time, and PR companies are pushing them, and everyone's aware of move into podcasts, but it feels like the music industry has been a bit slower on that. So it's great that that's starting to happen now.
And because of my limited podcast history, even though actually we did do a Sunday Best podcast probably about 10 years ago. So yeah. I think when you're talking about those very early ones, we actually did one then. We didn't know what on earth it was, what we were doing, but we did dabble in it. But, you know, now just thinking back, it's just, you know, it's amazing that there are so many thousands out there, and you really have to stick out from the crowd, don't you? Obviously, mine's about festivals, so I know I'm going to get some people who are festival fans. But for you, who it's a chat one and it's a talking one,
there's so many of them.
You've got to rely on your own sort of depth of interviewing skills.
100%. There's so many. I think one of the problems that podcasting has had is that people have thought podcasts are two people sitting down and having a conversation, but it's as broad as anything. It's like music isn't someone singing over a guitar. It can be someone rapping over a beat. It can be anything. And podcasts have that as well. Some of my favourite podcasts are things like Hardcore Listing, where guests come on and have to pick a top five of anything, or things like Films to Be Buried With, where people basically a desert island discs of films. That there's all these questions and points in your life and the film that relates to it. So, and Off Menu as well, where you go on and just pick your favourite starter, main course, side and dessert.
How long does that last?
It's an hour. It's genuinely an hour, and it's really good. It's James Acaster and Ed Gamble, so it's really good people. But things like that, they stand out more now.
The niche ones.
Yeah, they stand out more than just here's two people having an interview about their career, and you know.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate. Okay, well, let's go back into festies. I like this. It's a little bit schizophrenic, but let's go from podcast to festivals. So number four.
Number four is, it's one that's got better with hindsight. It's Springsteen at Glastonbury. And Springsteen I was a bit of a fan of at that point, but I've become far more of a fan of since. So it's kind of looking back and remembering these moments. At the time, at points, I was thinking, he's playing for a long time, isn't he? This is an awfully long... Because he did like a two-hour, maybe longer. Thinking. Yeah, played for ages.
I'll be honest, an hour and a half, I was off to the dance village.
Yeah, yeah. Completely understandable, but it's that thing of now... Now I'm more familiar with his back catalogue and more appreciative of his art. Like the way he manages to keep that energy and make a show exciting and engaging. It makes me think of the first time me and Dan supported Billy Bragg. My plan was, because again, I had to get back to Essex. My plan was to deck around for a bit of Billy's set and then leave. And I watched all of Billy's set from beginning to end, and it was just a man
you
and a guitar.
Missed the train for Billy Bragg.
Yeah, I missed the train for Billy. It was just him and a guitar, and it was just amazing what he could do with that. And there's something like that with Bruce, that it's just guitar-based music. And again, you look at Stormzy this year at Glastonbury, all the different things he had going on. It was one of the best sets I've ever seen. But Bruce, obviously he's got an amazing band, but he's leading that band. He's bringing them around. He's got everyone in the palm of his hand, and... He's having that energy for 2 hours, for 3 hours,
yeah,
however
like
long he chooses to play.
Wasn't it? But I have to hold my hands up, and I love some Springsteen and maybe the obvious ones, but I've just never sat down and listened to a load of it. But I was surprised the other day, you know that me and Tyo do Purple Rave, which is like a tribute to Prince. There's Fleet Mac Wood that's out there for Fleetwood Mac. Enthusiast, there's a Springsteen one.
Wow.
Which is apparently like, I think it's monthly or possibly even... more regularly in London.
It's one of the things that won me over on Springsteen was seeing an interview with Prince and him saying the living performer I respect the most is Springsteen. At that point, he was saying
he's off to HMV to go and buy his back catalogue.
That's it. He's like and again they are so comparable because it's a solo artist that just orchestrates this amazing band that can at the drop of a hat go off and do a completely different set. They'll change their set every night. Will go for hours and as soon as that comparison clicked, I was like, I get it now. And I kind of regret not being
late to the party.
I was as well. As a kid, my dad loved Springsteen and I was like, what is this rubbish? And then as the years and years have gone on, it's been, I get it now.
Okay, cool. Right, so we're sat here. Pip has just dropped off about 4,000 excess Pod Bible. So Pod Bible is a little What else came out in this kind of? It's bigger than the Glastonbury program, sort of a laminate, but it's smaller than your regular magazine.
It's pocket size, it's made to be slide in your back pocket,
sort of slip in your top pocket. Pocket,
completely.
So it's kind of tube friendly. If you live in London, if you don't, then where else is this distributed?
I mean, we distribute them in London, Brighton, and Margate. We will be doing them at the Manchester Podcast Festival. We did the Edinburgh Fringe, so we get about when we can, but it's also digital and people can order the physical copies online at podbiblemag.com too. But yeah, it's just a guide to podcasts. It's some interviews with podcasters and just a load of recommendations, because me and Stu Whiffin, who does Off the Beaten Track and does Hardcore Listing,
you may have heard Rob DeBank on that.
Yes, yeah, exactly. A great episode. We kind of were sitting down and going, well, everyone hears about podcasts through word of mouth. And that's it. There seemed to be no other way to get into podcasts other than word of mouth. And both of us coming from music backgrounds, and Stu from club promoting. He had a band that was in the NME and they were managed by Ricky Gervais and all sorts of weird stuff when he was younger. But in our youth, if you wanted to get your band out there, you'd take out an ad in the NME or in Melody Maker.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, let's try and make that, build that platform for podcasters. And we came up with Pod Bible, and Spotify came on board, and Acast came on board, and it's blown up since then. It all started at the beginning of the year, and it's just getting bigger and bigger.
No, it's amazing. If you're out there and you're interested in a podcast, which hopefully you are because you're listening to this, then podbiblemag.com online, or look out for Scroobius Pip hanging around on street corners with a big pile of excess paper that's
often
trying to get
the way.
How much are you going to pay me to distribute this lot?
Well, you know,
big old chunk of them here.
That's a good chunk. So this I think in the offices it's perfect, right?
So this is number 5, October edition, and it's got a great cartoon on the front for the Football Ramble podcast, presumably, like amazing cartoon. Then you open the and then the inside front cover is an advert for Unheard, the Fred and Rose West tapes.
Intense, right?
So yeah, I mean, it goes from like
it's
got everything in there. You can listen to the.
That's the beauty of podcasts. Is it's that depth and variation. Is you can find it, you can enjoy them educationally. You can be listening to documentaries and whatnot, or you can be enjoying, I said, things like Off the Beaten Track, where it's kind of a hipster Desert Island Discs. It's going through music and really getting into music, but not in as formal a manner. So
yeah. Or listen to Fred West or the Bruised Banana, an Arsenal podcast, which is in here as well. So the Bruised Banana, there you go.
There's loads of good ones. There was one, we do a thing at the back that's smaller podcasts, and one of them that put themselves forward was Desert Island Dips, and you have to pick your favourite dips to take onto a desert island. I was like, just as a name, that's wonderful. That's a beautiful thing.
A series of one. Okay, let's delve back into the world of festies for the lovely people listening at home or wherever they are. And shout out to you. Thanks for tuning in again to the A to Z of festivals with me, Rob DeBank, and him, Scroobius Dave Pitt. What's your number 3?
So my number 3 is, I mean, I could have made a top 5 all at best of all, but it would have seemed biased. But number 3 is, again, there's been some headliners I've loved, there have been some smaller ones, but it's one that surprised me. It was someone I was already a fan of, but I wasn't expecting the emotional feeling. It was Bat Flashes on the main stage, when the main stage was at the other side of the field.
Up the hill.
Down from the woods, yeah. It was down from the woods, right? I'm sure it was at that bit of that stage. I think it was the first year it had moved, actually, into its final
was
position.
Was that a very wet year?
Yeah, it was a wet year, and she was opening the stage, essentially, I think, at midday or 1 o'clock she was on. The sun had just started to come out, and everyone was just sat there. I don't think anyone was standing up, but there was tens of thousands of people just in this field, just watching Natasha do what she does best, and it was just hypnotic. And I was already a fan of Bat Flashes, and we'd done a few gigs together over the years, but this was when it really, really clicked. It's like, this was where it was meant to be. Like, dubstep was meant to be in a basement in Shoreditch, and then it's everywhere else. You find that it should have been in Plastic People, and that's its real home. Bat Flashes was meant to be on a huge stage in a huge field as the sun's coming out in the middle of the day, with not rain, in the middle of the night. Yeah,
rainbows.
Yeah, yeah. It was just beautiful. And as said, all the obvious things of enchanting and bewitching and all that, but it truly was. It felt like a spiritual experience to stumble upon that. And
I'm glad you chose her because, yeah, out of all the people that I've ever been asked about Best of All, I've never. I love her music. Yeah. And do you still follow her?
I think she's fantastic. And I'm loving how people adapt and how people change. I love the campaign she kind of did, that it's kind of a short film on Instagram and stuff like that on her new stuff. And
I think she was working with Mr. Dan, wasn't she? Who I work with and stuff. So
And Kate Tempest did loads of great stuff with. Some good people.
Nice one, man. Okay, let's dip out of your top five ever performances at festivals with Scroobius Pip. So French Bill in Taboo. Let's talk about that.
Yes,
co-starring alongside the mum's favourite.
Yeah,
Tom Hardy
and Stephen Graham and so many amazing people. Yeah,
oh man. Well, I mean, what was that like stepping onto set the first day?
It was mad. It was mad, Rob. It was a weird one as well because I'd auditioned and they'd liked it, but then the character I auditioned for got cut, and then so I started. That year.
That's a bit annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of like, it happens a lot. You're like, but, you smashed it, but the character isn't there anymore. But then I started the new year not knowing what was going to happen. And that's the weird thing going from music into acting is, with music, I'd know album comes out at this time, there's festival season, there's a tour, there's so on and so forth. But acting, you start every year going, I wonder if anything's going to happen. And on like the 6th of January, I got a phone call saying, we've got another character and we want to offer it to you. And can you start next week? And I was like, yep, okay.
Check my diary. Hold on. Yeah, it's fine.
Exactly. Yeah, I can make that work. And then the first day I was on set with Stephen Graham because I was kind of in every scene with him. And he just took me under his wing. Me and Tom Hardy had chatted over email once or twice, but didn't know each other. So to get there and to be so welcomed, despite it being my, I think at that stage it was my third acting gig, maybe my fourth.
Were you kind of honest about that? Did you say, I'm totally crapping myself.
I don't know what I'm doing. Or genuinely, it's why my role grew, because every time they'd rap me for the day, I'd ask if I can stay and watch and just watch on the monitors because I wanted to learn. Again, you've got some really good actors there, so.
Need extra with a beard over here.
Well, generally,
get French Bill out.
Every now and then, they'd realise that they needed someone to be killed off in a scene, or something had happened, like an actor wasn't, and they were killing the character off, and they'd be like, we'll get French Bill to kill him. So I got more kills and more action, because I was just about...
How many kills did you have? Because you were quite a sinister character.
Yeah, I killed quite a few. Yeah, I got a few out there. And hopefully, again, if season two ever happens, I survived. So, yeah, I'm meant to be in the next season.
I absolutely loved that series.
So it's great, wasn't it?
It does. So if you... I'm the worst actor in the world. And I remember being in a school play at the age of, like, 13 and just being terrified for months afterwards. Before and afterwards. But can you... You know, when they say action, can you totally get into the character and just forget that there's a film camera there and like the director? Or
yeah, I'm decent at that. Again, it's all a learning curve. The thing that excites me about acting is that I plan to be doing it for the rest of my life. So that's years and years to get better and better and better and better. It always felt like with music, there's a point potentially of diminishing returns, particularly as a rapper. Like, I didn't know if I wanted to be a 50-year-old rapper. I didn't know if that was going to be a required thing. I didn't know if anyone needed that. And there are, obviously, you've got your tribe and all these amazing guys. But, it always felt that there was, at some point, there was going to be an expiration date on it. Whereas the thing that excites me about acting is everything that's happened so far has been amazing, but the thought of what could be ahead is all the more exciting.
It could be an old French Bill in series 24 of
Exactly,
Taboo.
Old man French Bill.
on that hip-hop thing, because obviously I've been booking festivals for quite a while, and every year I kind of look out there. And I mean, Grandmaster Flash, you know, he must be well into his 50s, and he's still totally smashing, and I think there's a place for him. But then there's definitely other ones that you look at, and it's like, oh, man, I wish you'd sort of knocked it on the head 10 years ago.
Who's this for now? Yeah, exactly that. And I'm really honest about things like that with myself. So it was looking at that and going, again, that thing of stopping when we stopped, it's like, this is all going great. Our third album was our highest charting album, was our biggest kind of, and the tour and everything was great. It's like, right, that's, I said, as there was other things I wanted to do, I wanted to try acting, I wanted to take a year out. And the way I got into music was I was working in a record store and I quit and gave myself a year to try and make music work. So I think you do have to, or for me, I need to go 100% into things. So if I was continuing touring and making music, I wouldn't have been trying as hard as I should in acting.
Yeah.
So it was a conscious thing of, I'm going to stop that. The podcasting, it's once a week, it's in my control. I can record a load and have a load lined up for months. So I felt that gave me enough focus.
I didn't realise that. I thought it was just like, you got to Tuesday afternoon and you were like, shit, I need one for tomorrow morning.
Who's around?
Yeah.
Who's around? I mean, it was good to get an email off of yesterday. Yeah. No, yeah, it's exactly that. It's that kind of, I need to throw myself 100% into action if I want to know if it's going to work. And then in the first year of doing that, I got a Guy Ritchie film, and then I went straight from that into an FX show that was on in America, and then on to Taboo. So it was kind of
madness.
Right, I've given, and then I've had periods like I'm in the last 18 months, I've had a week on set for a Netflix thing. So it's one of those things where
toilet roll advert.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where you have these big gaps, but I feel I'm in it now. I feel I'm earning my stripes and I'm learning and developing. So, yeah.
Yeah. You always got the pod Bible to fall back
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, we're running out of time. So, let's look at your number two.
So, number two was...
That sounds wrong.
Was, yeah.
I don't want to look at your number two, but could you tell me your number two?
And number two's a weird one because I've never been a fan of V Festival. When me and Dan had our agent, Chris Hearn at Coda... The amazing Chris Hearn. We always said we didn't want to do V because it didn't feel like a festival to me. It felt like an advert or something. It felt odd, but I saw the Prodigy there at V97, and it's one of the best performances and gigs I've ever seen. It was the Prodigy in their backyard out in Essex. It was at the peak of Firestarter and all the Fat of the Land kind of era, and it was just amazing. But those guys put on a show and just had the whole field just rumbling.
I think probably they didn't ever probably put on a Duff show, did they? Can't imagine there many people coming away from a Prodigy show going, they didn't really put their heart and soul into that. It was like
the passion and excitement, and again, it was a big influence on me and Dan, like as you mentioned, that we did build a good live following. It's because we were adamant that live was just as important, if not more important, and seeing those guys who didn't always have a traditional drums and guitar kind of setup, had electronics. I think at that point they'd just added Giz Butt on guitar, so they'd added a guitarist, but still, it wasn't, here's a band, it was, here's what we're doing, and we can fill any stage and any field.
Yeah.
And that was a massive influence to go, right, let's make this a exciting and electric show.
Yeah. Well, R.I.P. Mr. Flint.
100%.
And, good choice for number two. But I can glance over your phone there and see number one already, and the excitement is building.
And see
room.
A number one that you're going to want to talk about as well.
Yeah,
so.
We've got another podcast starting right now, just on your number one.
Yeah. So it was Prince at Hop Farm, and it's the only time I got to see Prince, and I'm so glad I did. It felt like I was watching an alien. Like a different, it sounds so stupid, but when he came on stage, every other band, even bands I love, they come on stage and, there's Bruce Springsteen, for example. When Prince stepped out, it was like, who is this being? And it was just, it was mind-blowing. And like
you said about seeing the Prodigy at V, it wasn't, because I went to the Hop Farm as well, with Josie and all our mates, you know, total Prince aficionados, and it was like probably the second least, second wrongest place to actually see him in the Hop Farm in Kent. You know, with a bill that was sort of slightly thrown together. And
completely,
and
it was
I remember walking through
London. I only just allow it as a festival because it was essentially a Prince gig and they had to put some other people on, it felt like. But
a lot of people, the reason it didn't even sell out is because people didn't actually believe it was happening. Because there were posters all over London, Prince, Hop Farm. It's like, Prince wouldn't be playing at the Hop Farm. No disrespect to the festival, but it hadn't, the year before it was something like the Water Boys or Dylan, and then suddenly it was Prince, and it was like this isn't happening. And we all went down there, didn't we? And it was like, it was absolutely incredible. And I think it was his only outdoor UK festival ever, possibly. Because you know that I tried every flipping year.
I asked you every flipping year. Have you got him yet? Almost.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. But I mean, I've bought people on the one where he got in touch through his agent 6 weeks before one of the festivals and said, right, I'm up for it. £1 million. And it was like, well, that's fine. But we booked the lineup 9 months ago and it's the door's open in 6 weeks and there's no way that we can do this. And it was the most annoying, frustrating thing ever.
To have it there, but out of reach.
And it was, and I think it was the next year that, or the year, the year after that he went to Hop Farm, and it was an incredible gig, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And again, I didn't expect the charm of him. I expected the musical prowess and the skill, but the little glances he would give and the little asides, like, it was beautiful. He was just so charming and lovable. You kind of think at times when someone's so talented, you're going to enjoy it, but you're probably going to be thinking, oh, what a dick, or whatever else. But it wasn't the case. He was the most charming man and the most effortlessly, cool performer.
Did you feel like he was playing just for you?
Yeah. Again, it's the weird thing of, in general at festivals, obviously you need big screens and that, but you have to try and, it's easy to get distracted. You're watching it on a screen rather than watching what's happening in front of you. But the screens on this, it was just there to give you those little glances and looks up he gave to just, it made it perfect.
Possibly one of the only headline performances I've seen at a festival where I haven't gone for a wee halfway through.
Yeah.
Because I'm quite weak-bladed, I'll be honest about that. And I'm often like, oh, I might go and have a quick wee and then come back. But you couldn't leave it, could you? It was just like, I'm not going to miss a single second
of this. It was my goddaughter's first ever gig, and she was about, I think she was probably about one, and she just had big ear protectors on and was just smiling away and confused by everything that's going on, because that's not, before then she'd pretty much lived in a room in East London, not on her own, with her family. so to then be in a field with hundreds of people and this going on was mind-blowing. But
incredible.
It's a hell of a, she's going to have the best answer to first gig at school and whatnot, when she's a bit older, isn't she?
Oh man, that's so good. Thank you so much for coming in and sitting on my very Stop and Start podcast. So what, you got Pod Vibe, we've got Distraction Pieces people need to check out. Anything else coming up?
That's pretty much everything at the moment. I'm working on a load of other stuff with script writing and stuff like that, but it's all such a slow and private process. It's such a stark difference from the music industry, where everything you do, you're releasing it as quickly as possible and getting that instant gratification, or you're playing live and they're there. With script writing, with auditions, all of that, you're doing so much work that only about 3 people know about.
Yeah.
And then
just
hopefully,
in case the character gets killed off.
Yeah. And then hopefully at the end it turns into something amazing. But other than that, people assume I'm just making a podcast every week. But I'll take that as well. That's fine.
A man of many talents. Thank you so much, Scroobius Pip.
It's been a pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers, man. This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.